Hey everyone. Before we start the podcast, I just wanted to say that in the show, we briefly discussed the late James Matthey, who passed away just after we recorded the episode. Needless to say, both Mark and I are saddened by this loss and we're so grateful for his legacy and his contributions to the games industry. Please enjoy the show. Welcome to the Legal Moves Podcast. This is Zachary Strebeck, your favorite game lawyer and your host of the podcast. So I must confess, I haven't had a show in, I guess it's been over a year. The episode with Jordan Draper was in December 2017. So it's been, it's been quite a while. But I've got a bunch of guests lined up over the next at least 6 months, and we'll be releasing something every month, starting with this one. So on this reboot episode, I'm talking with Mark Swanson from Odd Bird Games. He's the developer and the publisher of a game called Feudum and all its expansions. So welcome, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Zach. Thanks for having me.
No, it's great. It's my pleasure. Yeah, I've actually wanted to have you on the show for a while now. I haven't told you that, but I've been thinking about it.
It's an honor to be the first of your reboot series,
yes,
I guess.
Yes, yes. It's very exciting. I realized I need to get my act together and actually send out a bunch of emails. I have I found a guy to do the podcast editing for me and all that. I mean, the editing, quote unquote editing, is just sticking the music on the front and the back and, you know, maybe doing some other stuff. But yeah, so I'm making a go of it this time. So listeners, I'm serious. you're gonna have legal moves in your inbox every month. All right. Mark, let's talk about you. Let's not talk about me. Tell me about your background. So what were you doing, or what are you currently doing before you were making games? How'd you get started?
Yeah, okay. Well, my degree is in advertising from the Missouri School of Journalism right here in my neck of the woods. And back in the 90s, I worked for a firm in Chicago, a couple of different agencies in Chicago, including Footcone and Belding, where I was a copywriter for brands like Oscar Mayer and Kraft and Sprite. And so that was a lot of fun. And then after that, I moved to New York during the dot-com boom, and I worked at several internet startup companies managing their brands. So that's kind of my background. Now, I've played, as far as, you know, what got me started in the game industry, I've played games my whole life, but I really didn't discover Euro games or German board games, as they used to call them in the late 90s. And I remember the first Euro game I played. It was called Cartagena. It was about escaping from an underground prison. And but after that, I discovered, you know, the gateway games, Settlers of Catan and Citadels and all those Aaliyah bookshelf games like Ra and Taj Mahal and Princes of Florence, Puerto Rico, and a lot more. And as far as how I got started, I mean, I played all these games, and while I was playing these games, I kept looking for the ultimate game, you know, to have in my bookshelf, the holy grail of games that would feature all of my favorite mechanics, but was maybe a little bit more open world, you know, more of an epic sandbox game where you could eke out your existence any way you saw fit. And I couldn't find that game, at least the game that I was envisioning. So I created it.
Yeah. If you can't, if you want something done right, you got to do it yourself, right?
I suppose, yeah, you could look at it that way. Yeah. And I didn't create it right away. I just started tinkering with it, and I never thought it would culminate in what it is now. So I'm very, I guess, taken aback by its success and how it continues to grow.
It's very cool. What do you think it was that kind of captured people's imagination and made your game so popular?
Well, people tell me different things. They like the open world sandbox aspect of it. They like the unique mechanic. I mean, one kind of hallmarks of a good game is it has a unique mechanic. When I think of games that I've played in the past that offer that, I think of Zulkin, the Mayan calendar game where it has that spinning dial, or way back when Traders of Genoa, that has kind of this power stack that kind of moves along and you can pick your path, or a game like Shogun, where there's a battle tower into which you throw these cubes to resolve a battle. And I really like unique mechanics. And so I created this cyclical economy, this where guild factions had a symbiotic relationship, and there's an ebb and flow of resources that go from one guild to the next. And so people tell me that makes my game very enjoyable and unique.
Very cool. So how does being a copywriter or an advertising professional, how does that inform your game design? Or does it help you in any way in actually making your games?
Yeah, I mean, I would say so. I mean, being a copywriter definitely helps me with creating the narrative of my game. I think gamers want, immersive experiences. So it's not enough to have a great art or even great mechanics. You have to tell a story. So being a writer definitely helps me with that. And also really about leveraging different types of media helps, like namely paid media, earned media, owned media. All of that's important. All of that's part of my world as an advertising professor. Yeah. For paid media, all the ad space you buy, the banners and whatnot. For earned media, all the public relations and the interviews and panels and the podcast that we're doing now definitely helps with exposure. And then owned media, which I think, sometimes is overlooked by people, but it's simply the stuff that you have control of, like your Facebook page and your Twitter page, your Instagram page, your YouTube channel. So all of that's important. And that said, I have to probably stress that when it comes to the classic four P's of marketing, I'm kind of taking you back to college, I
Not
guess,
my college.
The product,
maybe your college,
but the four P's are the product, place, price, and promotion. And promotion is, the advertising piece of it, but it's just one aspect of it. The product is also pretty critical. So, good products, the game itself has a kind of a way of rising to the surface over time if it's good. So you really can't skimp on the mechanics, the art, or for that matter, thoroughly play testing your game. All of that's fundamental.
Yeah, that reminds me of, I just read a book called, I think it's Perennial Seller. Is that the book? Do you know this book? It's basically,
I have heard
he's by Ryan Holiday. He kind of discusses this. The great product will kind of rise to the top, but actually making your product really great and spending the time and sort of what that differentiates your run of the mill products from something that's truly special.
Exactly. You can't, like my advertising professor when I was in college used to say, you can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. So you have to start with something good. And then after it's good, then advertising can certainly facilitate it, make it better. And get awareness out there.
Absolutely. So you used Kickstarter to launch your business. Let's start first with, before you actually launched your campaign, what kind of preparation had you done? Were you doing a lot of pre-release or pre-campaign marketing?
Oh, absolutely. Like any tool that you incorporate into your business, including Kickstarter, you have to invest the time to make it work. And one of the secrets to, in my opinion, successfully funding on Kickstarter is to build very smart content and a strong community prior to the launch. And of course, by leveraging social media. And so for me, that meant focusing on building community on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, but also having a very content-rich Board Game Geek page, right? I mean, that's accessible to any indie publisher. You go there and you make sure that there are plenty of photos and there's a compelling narrative about the game, a description of the game, so that community can interact with your game long before it's launched. And I'd say in addition to all that online preparation, making sure you build a community offline is important too. I remember participating in local Unpub events. You can go, you know, go online and find out what Unpub is if you're an indie publisher. And that gives people a chance to, you know, demo your game, your prototype. I also featured Feudum at Gen Con's First Exposure Playtest Hall, they call it. And there's lots of conventions now that have these venues where indie publishers can expose their games to the public.
Yeah, that's definitely helpful. I mean, not even just in building your community beforehand, which is absolutely helpful, but in just getting not your friends and not your family, getting some people who may be allowed to have a negative opinion of the game and maybe help you with some constructive criticism.
Exactly. In fact, one interesting approach that not that many people take advantage of is the Kickstarter page itself allows you to publish your unlaunched page long before you go live. So people can actually leave comments and suggest reward structures or changes to your reward structures or participate in coming up with stretch goals. And because they have that vested interest and they feel like they're a part of it, then they get excited. They tell their friends about it. And, you know, that's why Kickstarter or crowdfunding in general, Kickstarter in particular, is such an amazing phenomenon. It's like the democratization of venture capital. You know, no longer do you have to go to some deep pocket VC or, you know, or an angel investor and give away half your company or promise fourfold return on their investment. You can just basically let people pre-order your game and then use that money to make it and hopefully have a little extra left over to start a company. So it's really quite an amazing phenomenon.
I mean, over the years, well, and so maybe this is a good question. So how has the Kickstarter landscape, kind of changed over the past couple of years? I know that it's very different. It's a very different situation than it was maybe 6 years ago when you could, there weren't so many campaigns going up that you could put your campaign up and maybe get some traction there. Now it's,
That's a good question. I mean, Tabletopia recently asked me to contribute to their blog, and I wrote an article that basically answers this question pretty fully. It's called Kickstarter for Board Games, Is It Still Working? Pros and Cons. But in summary, I mean, the biggest difference, in my opinion, is just the sheer volume of games being Kickstartered. The game category alone on Kickstarter is the most popular, and it raises about $1 billion overall, which is about 1/4 of Kickstarter's total pledges. So there's a lot of competition and it's harder to stand out. But, you know, like any market, saturated or not, good games rise to the surface. And the best way to handle that is to do your homework, to, you know, develop community, like I mentioned, surrounding your game to ensure a good first day on your Kickstarter launch. And also, I would say, you know, don't be afraid of failure. There are many campaigns that fail to fund, but when they get relaunched, they end up doing very well.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned keeping a community. Do you do a lot of email marketing? Do you find that email is a good place to reach people and foster a community?
I do. In fact, I'm actually in the process of collecting all of my email data so that I can put together a monthly newsletter. Jamie Stagmeier does that really well with the Stonemeyer blog. He stays in front of all of his customers. And so, yeah, definitely that is a big marketing tool.
It's funny because every time I get his email every month, it's like right on the first day of the month as he's ready. Every time I say, man, I really gotta get my newsletter together and get that going, because it's like that's my monthly reminder that I need to send something to my own mailing list.
I agree. I get it too. And there's always something kind of intriguing and something relevant about it. It definitely piques your curiosity.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, he's great with that. So since the campaign, you successfully funded. What have things been like in the past few years? What have been the challenges in growing your business and keeping it successful?
Yeah, it's crazy. Once a game experiences some success on Kickstarter, It's like the bells and whistles go off and opportunities start to present themselves. I mean, I remember early on, I was doing a lot of heavy lifting, trying to draw attention to the game. But once Kickstarter does well, people want to associate themselves with that success. And so foreign publishers, for instance, approach you to localize your game in their language. So, you know, in return for giving them slightly better than wholesale pricing, they'll translate your game. And with Feudum, I have localization partners in, off the top of my head, Germany, Spain, Russia, China, Italy, Brazil. I just signed a recent contract with Korea and Poland. And then, you know, in terms of other partnerships, these multi-platform online gaming environments like Tabletopia and Tabletop Simulator, which uses Steam to allow, you know, players to play online, they approach you and they want to put your game online so that people can play it that way, and then develop DLCs, you know, downloadable content. And then recently an app development company reached out to me interested in making an app. So providing all the assets and managing that process can be time consuming. But then there's other aspects like managing, you know, my warehouse, the shipping, customer service takes time. I mean, I found out about a company called Quartermaster Logistics, which I guess everybody knows about now. But I remember when they first were launching, I met them down at in Dallas, Fort Worth, and at the Board Game Geek convention. Mm-hmm. And I found out, oh, they're a division of Cool Stuff. They must know all about best practices. It was kind of a no-brainer. So once I fulfilled my first campaign, they took over and they managed all fulfillment centers around the world, in China, the UK, Australia, and Florida. And so suddenly I have all this, like, a little bit of leftover inventory. So do I pay pallet storage at all these places? Do I consolidate all of that and send it back to Florida where they are until the next campaign? I mean, these are all kind of big decisions. And then let's see, what other piece of it? Manufacturing, right? Which for me is Panda manufacturing. That's a huge job too, because if you release expansions to a game, which I have, there's ongoing communication with your project manager, with regard to prototyping and digital files. So it really never ends.
Well, that's called running business. And I guess that's kind of the, what differentiates the casual game creator versus someone who wants to be a publisher. And this is one of the issues that comes up when we talk about with me, with clients. You know, do you sign with a publisher who's going to take care of all this stuff for you and you're going to make less money? Or do you handle everything and you get all the money, but you also get all the headache?
Well, right. So that's a great question. A lot of wannabe game designers ask me that at conventions and whatnot. And I basically break it down for them this way. I say, look, you can go to these speed dating venues at Gen Con or Origins where, you know, big companies such as Mayfair Games or Z-Man Games or Queen Games will say, let's take a look at your prototype. And if they like it, then they'll sign a contract with you and you will get anywhere between 5% and 7% royalties. They'll do all the marketing. They'll do all the Kickstarter campaigns, if they even do that. And all you have to do is just be a creator, but you surrender creative control sometimes. They'll take your rules and they'll streamline it. They'll choose the artist. You don't really get a whole lot of say, but hey, you don't have to do a lot of work and you get to do what you love, which is to make games, right? But if you want more than 5% to 7%, then you become your own publisher. And that is definitely a job, but you're making so much more, and you're making maybe 25% of everything. And you might think, well, where's the rest of it go? Well, it goes to your manufacturing company. It goes to the distributor who gets 60% off. The retailer gets 50% off. Localization partners typically get 70% off. So, and then you have shipping and you have freight. But 25% is a lot better than 5%, you know? So that's when you have to decide, do I want to be a game designer plus a business owner? And it's not an easy choice.
No, it is not. Especially, I mean, with the litany of things that you now have to deal with. I don't know. It takes a certain kind of person who can kind of get into that. And
you know, it does. I mean, it's like I'm an entrepreneurial sort, so I kind of gravitated towards that. But I think that part of it too is if you have a successful Kickstarter campaign and practically overnight, or in my case, in 30 days, you suddenly have, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars that you didn't have before. Suddenly something happens in your brain where you're like, I need to be wise about managing this money now.
Most people think that.
And it's also...
Some people take the opposite approach, but they're infamous.
Well, you know, you have, I guess my point is you have this kind of incentive. You're incentivized to now make smart decisions, you know, because you now have some money to facilitate and fund those smart decisions when in terms of choosing, choosing companies to help you.
Definitely. Yeah. And there are a lot of, I don't want to call them predatory, but I mean, there are a lot of companies out there that are, you know, everyone wants a piece of it, especially when you're successful. So making sure that you're choosing smart partners and choosing partners. And that's where these communities, not your game community, but the community of other publishers and other developers can kind of come in. You can kind of vet the partners that you work with through that. I know that in a lot of those Facebook groups, you'll see new manufacturers and new, you know, marketing people and PR people. They'll pop in there and start to kind of advertise themselves all the time. So
I agree. I mean, I look at it this way. Every business is like a machine made up of an array of cogs that you can either build yourself or buy from a third party. For example, I could coordinate shipping myself. You know, when I first started to explore Jamie Stagmeyer's Stonemeyer blog, you know, I learned that he kind of tried to do everything himself early on, right? Or you can like outsource to a company like Quartermaster Logistics. I could handle post campaign fulfillment, or I could entrust it to a company like BackerKit. And there's other ones besides BackerKit. There's Kickstarter has its own back post campaign fulfillment as well. I could nurture relationships with all the distributors out there myself, you know, go to Gamma in Vegas and try to do that. Or I could rely on a game distribution service company like Impressions, you know, good old Aldo out there does a lot of the footwork for me in terms of distribution services. I could manage all my ongoing relationships with customers and influencers and localization partners, or do what I did, which is hire an intern to help me with that, right? And so, you know, but when it comes to like outsourcing Kickstarter promotions, I would definitely do your homework. There are some definitely, like you mentioned, some fly-by-night companies that are kind of sketchy. I mean, you're already given a percentage to Kickstarter and to BackerKit. So if they're managing your back-end fulfillment, and of course there are the Skype fees. So I would avoid any, in my opinion, any kind of arrangement where you're giving more percentage of monies raised away to anyone. But other revenue models, like, you know, a flat fee might be okay.
Yeah. I mean, there are arguments to be made either way. You know, a percentage incentivizes them to bump up the amount of money, et cetera, et cetera. But I understand you also have to build that kind of thing into your goals and into what you believe you can deliver for that amount of money. I think that's one thing that a lot of people don't quite figure out all the way before they get into this.
I agree. And as an example, I mean, I use BackerKit for back-end fulfillment, but just this last campaign I launched, they approached me with this promotion service, this kind of a value add, which I tried, and it was definitely better than break even for me. But I was interested because it was built on, you know, a relationship that
And that you saw that you could trust them, that they had a good product, et cetera, right? Yeah.
Right.
Well, we're going to wrap it up soon, but as a last question, I mean, what advice would you have for new creators that are just getting into it? And let's stick with your area of professional expertise. Anything advertising, copywriting wise, that you could give to new creators?
Well, I'm trying to think of like ways to advertise. Chad at Board Game Geek has some great advertising options. You know, Board Game Geek is the premier portal. That's where people go to find out about board games. And you can do contests. You can do run of site banners on Board Game Geek. And scheduling these things around your campaign can really give your campaign a boost. They did for me. I think tapping into influencers is pretty key. Now, this would be word of mouth advertising. And that ensures that you're tapping into other people's audiences, and the awareness of your game can build exponentially that way. And that means reaching out to, you know, bloggers or video bloggers called vloggers or reviewers or podcasters or going on your show,
yeah.
You know, and use that exposure on your Kickstarter page to build credibility. I mean, once you have someone who posts a YouTube video talking about your game, well, put that on your Kickstarter page. There are so many out there besides, you know, Rotto Runs Through, right? There's Undead Viking, there's Man versus Meeple, Ant Lab Games, John Gets Games, Rodney Runs Through It, Watch It Played. Trying to think of podcasts, The Secret Cabal Gaming Podcast, you know.
And even those are the more of the top tier ones, the where there's probably a lower tier under there.
Absolutely.
That, you know,
absolutely.
And this, yeah, this kind of social proof, that's what they call it. That's what I've
heard. I can't forget Jimmy Hudson and James Hudson. Those are some good friends that I've made over the years. And a great source for knowing who the reviewers are can be found on another industry guru, I like to call him, James Matthey. He has a site.
Sure.
And for me, you know, his site, along with Jamie Stagmeyer's Stonemeyer blog, are like treasure troves of online resources. Absolutely. That every publisher should know about. And I've learned so much from just those two sites alone, whether it's about distribution or localization partners or game design or Kickstarter campaigns, building community. It's all there, you know, it's amazing.
Yeah. And my advice would be, you can't know too much, right? So the more you learn, it's always going to help you, even if it just helps you with better perspective on what your partners are doing and whether or not that's worth the money or how to do it yourself. Or, I mean, any number of aspects of this, you can just by learning more about the industry and how it works and the mechanics of, you know, who are these distributors and all of these different roles that people are playing in the industry.
Yeah. And it seems pretty daunting at first. I mean, I think you have to just kind of deal with it question by question, you know, kind of like, do you have a question? Well, go to Stonemeyer blog and type in a search and see if it's covered. And you'd be surprised how much information you can get just by going there. Jamie also wrote a book called A Crowdfunder Strategy Guide, which is like the Bible for any new publisher with ambitions of crowdfunding a game. So,
yep, amazing book. So I will link to all that stuff, the different blogs and the book and everything in the show notes for this on my blog. And I think that's it, Mark. Thanks again for coming on the show.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been great. It's actually been super informative. That's why I love this podcast, because I actually learned a ton just from talking with the guests, which is great. And then I can pass that info on to my clients. And then, maybe one day when I make my own game, which I doubt will ever happen. I'm not much of a designer.
Just give me a call.
You never know. Okay. We'll do. So where can our listeners find you on the internet?
Maybe the best way is just going to the Kickstarter and searching for Feudum, where you can learn about all the campaigns I've launched and even the latest one called Rudders and Ramparts. As far as social media and websites, you can find me at facebook.com/Feudum or on Instagram and Twitter at Feudum Game, or visit my website at oddbirdgames.com.
Excellent. And you can find me at gamelawyerblog.com. You can read lots of posts about the legal side of game development. Mark, thanks again. And listeners, I will see you all next month.